This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A bit later in the hour, we'll be talking about electronic voting technology. But first, 8 months after landing on the Red Planet, more than 200 Martian days into its exploration, the rover Spirit's first peer-reviewed published research findings are out today in the journal Science. And the picture on Mars isn't exactly what scientists thought it would be. Spirit, that's the first of two rovers to land on Mars, was sent to Gusev Crater, a spot geologists thought had been a lake in the planet's distant past. And the rover, armed with its geological toolkit, was to search for signs of past water. But what it found isn't exactly what scientists had anticipated. But the discoveries were nonetheless quite intriguing, and oh, those pictures. So we're going to start the hour by talking with one of the mission scientists. He's in charge of the PanCam. We're going to talk with him about these first comprehensive results from NASA's current mission to Mars. And you're welcome to join in the conversation, get a couple of questions in. 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. And as always, you can surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. Let me introduce my guest. Jim Bell is the lead scientist for the Panoramic Camera Team for the NASA Mars Exploration Rover missions. He's also an associate professor of astronomy at Cornell in Ithaca, New York. He joins us from his office there. Welcome back to Science Friday, Dr. Bell.
Hi, Ira. Thanks. Great to be on the show.
And now, just to reiterate, you sent the rover there because you thought there might be water there. It might be an ancient lake.
That's right. We could tell from orbital images going back to the Viking missions in the 70s that this large hole in the ground, Gusev Crater, about the size of Connecticut, was what a geologist calls a closed depression. There's a large channel that's flowing from the south to the north into this big crater, and it looks a lot like that channel was carved by liquid water in the ancient Martian past. So the hypothesis from the orbital data was that Gusev may have contained liquid water, may have been a lake or a longstanding pond or that kind of environment.
And you didn't find evidence of water so far?
We have not found direct evidence from Spirit of that water that we set out to search for. What we found instead was that where the rover landed, which is pretty close to the center of that big impact crater, is surrounded by a large amount of volcanic rock, which is very surprising because there's no obvious volcano or volcanic vent anywhere around or in anywhere that we can see in the orbital images of that region.
So where do you think that it came from then?
Well, that's an excellent question. What we have to remember is that what we're looking at is an ancient surface. Surface of Mars for the past few billion years, we believe, has only been modified by wind or very gentle processes like that. If there were volcanoes and volcanism in the ancient past, then maybe those constructs were eroded away. Maybe they're buried. The evidence of the source for that volcanism hasn't been found. But what we're certain of is that we're sitting on volcanic rock and not sedimentary lake deposits. Now maybe there are the sedimentary deposits from Gusev's ancient water-rich history buried under those volcanic rocks. It's one of the reasons we took the Spirit rover over to Bonneville Crater, 500 or 600 meters north of the landing site, to see if that impact crater dug up some different kinds of rocks. We didn't find the evidence there either, and so that has compelled us to drive Spirit towards those hills that you remember seeing in early January. They were so far off, 3 or 4 kilometers off. We never imagined that we'd get there, and then within the past few weeks, Spirit has arrived in the hills, and now we're climbing up those hills, still looking for that evidence of water.
Mm. Which is so different than the evidence that the sister rover found on the other side of the planet.
That's right. It's been really interesting to have two very, very different missions operating on opposite sides of the planet. Interesting and exhausting, but interesting nonetheless. And, of course, that opportunity, we landed in the plains of Meridiani, right next to an outcrop of sedimentary rock, which we were able to drive over and use the rover's mobility to explore. We saw layered sedimentary deposits, small spherical concretion-like objects that look like they precipitated out of mineral-rich water. the chemistry and mineralogy, lots of different clues telling us that there was a lot of liquid water there. We don't know exactly how much. We don't know for how long, but it was not tiny little quantities. It was really standing bodies of water, and we found that evidence at the Opportunity site.
Yeah.
So we're still looking for it at the Spirit site.
Does that mean that you did not get anything really useful from that site? If you went there looking for water, did not find it, I guess finding the negative, that must be some sort of use to that, too.
Well, I mean, you know, it's still been an incredibly interesting and exciting investigation from the standpoint of understanding Mars as a planet, of course. We want to understand the history of volcanism and other processes on Mars. We want to understand the composition of the crust and upper mantle of the planet and how those relate to the composition of the Earth and the Moon and the other terrestrial planets. So from a fundamental scientific standpoint, you know, these results are incredibly interesting. We focused our specific goals of the mission primarily on looking for evidence of the past history of water on Mars, but lots of different secondary goals related to Mars as a planet and comparative planetary science. So it's hard to claim to be disappointed. I mean, we had a spectacular landing. In fact, it's actually interesting to be surprised. I mean, scientists generally love to be surprised and have their pet hypotheses sort of refuted. So now we have a little bit of a puzzle and a mystery. You know, where are the water lane sediments, if they even exist, in Gusev? And that's why we're exploring the hills. Now, I should add that we are starting to see more evidence of possibly water-formed minerals and geologic formations in those hills. The environment has changed dramatically from the plains, but we've only just started exploring them. So it's really a new mission for Spirit within the past few weeks.
And you're sort of in golden time now, over time.
Yeah, we're in bonus time. We are in bonus time. That's right. Both rovers were designed for a nominal mission of 90 sols, 90 days on Mars, and here we are at sol 210 on Spirit and sol 190 on Opportunity. So we're more than twice the expected lifetime of these rovers.
And Spirit's beginning to show a little bit of wear and tear. One of its wheels is dragging now.
Yeah, both rovers are starting to show small, relatively minor signs of aging. One of the wheels on Spirit is drawing a little bit too much current. One of the cables on the arm for Opportunity is experiencing some occasional intermittent power fluctuations. Both rovers are collecting dust on their solar panels and other surfaces, just dust that's settling out of the atmosphere. So, no major problems with either rover. They're both performing incredibly well, but they certainly are showing small signs of aging. The biggest problem that we actually have is that it's becoming winter in the southern hemisphere of Mars, where both rovers are, and so the sun is getting lower and lower in the sky. So we have less and less solar power to operate the instruments every day.
Could you keep them alive through the winter?
We think so, Ira. We think that we can, in fact, keep them alive during the winter. We have to operate at a reduced level of operations. Instead of running the instruments for 3, 4, 5 hours every day like we were doing early in the mission, we may get 1 or 2 hours per day of operations. There's even been some discussion of parking Spirit when we get to the top of this hill we're climbing and turning it to an orientation that is favorable for the sunlight and letting it sort of winter over there and operating as a lander for a few hours every day. As the power decreases over the next few months, it's going to get harder and harder to do a lot of aggressive science. So if we scale back and concentrate on surviving and keeping the batteries in a good state of charge and keeping the instruments healthy, then, of course, the sun will start coming back later this year as the seasons progress on Mars, as we pass the winter solstice, and we'll start getting more power, and then we can start ramping up our activities again.
Are there seasonal changes you could watch while sitting there?
That's a really good question. We're pretty close to the equator with both rovers, and so we're not going to see, ice that forms at the high latitudes on Mars, at least we don't believe we will. But we're already seeing changes in the atmosphere. We're seeing it get more cloudy. Mars is at the position, nearing the position in its orbit where it's farthest from the sun, so the temperatures are lowest. So we're already seeing more cloud activity. And if we keep going on past winter, we would expect to start to see some of the famous Mars dust storm activity start appearing at both sites as well.
Let me take a question or two if we have time. Let's go to Molly in Berkeley. Hi, Molly.
Hi there. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, fine.
Okay. What I'm wondering about was a very provocative report that came out, I think it was online and BBC reported it, of the possible spectral signature of ammonia on Mars, which suggested that ammonia, I guess, comes from two different places, volcanoes and microbes, and this it was pretty sensational. And then I didn't see anything else about it. This would have been from Mars Express. Do you know anything about that? Was that a misreport?
Of course, it's not a result from the rovers. I believe I did read a news report about that from Mars Express as well, but I haven't seen anything published in the peer review literature, Molly. So I really can't address it very well. It would be surprising. I will agree with you on that. But certainly, you know, all the planets have a small amount of just about anything that you can imagine. So I'd expect that there might be trace amounts of substances like ammonia or methane on a place like Mars. But sure, I wouldn't expect it to be a major constituent.
Can you say a little bit more just where that ammonia comes from? Is it true it's only from microbes and volcanoes?
Well, I don't think so, because you know, certainly there is an enormous amount of ammonia in the atmospheres of the giant planets, for example. So there are many sort of organic chemical processes that can occur when you get some carbon and hydrogen, which are very abundant all over the universe, together, a little bit of heat, some sunlight, some ultraviolet radiation. So it could just be sort of a background amount that Mars, like all the other planets, was endowed with.
Thanks for calling, Molly.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you. There was a report recently, we only got about a minute left, about that giant solar flare actually taking part of the Martian atmosphere away. Was that observable by your instruments at all?
Not by the rover instruments.
Yeah.
I suspect that there may be instruments on Mars Express that could be sensitive to that kind of activity. I haven't read any reports.
Yeah. Well, what next stop for the Spirit is getting what, a little higher up into that top of that ridge?
That's right, Ira, getting up into those hills, and we know from orbit that beyond those hills is a wonderful valley that we see evidence of layered rock and possibly even some sedimentary deposits from orbit. Now, we can't see those yet from the rover. We have to climb over this several hundred meter high hill and poke our eyes over the edge and take a look at what's down there. So we're hoping to survive through the winter and proceed down into this valley and explore a completely different kind of terrain.
From all the pictures you took, 9,300 images of the Martian surface. Any one stand out so far that you want to hang up on your wall?
Actually, the total image count is up to approximately 50,000.
Wow.
Both rovers, more than 30,000 of those from the color pan cams. Some of my favorite pictures are when we took pictures of the landers that we left behind. Very, you know, emotional, and I worked with a lot of people who built that hardware, and just to see the stuff that we brought along has been a lot of fun. And the other thing that we've done is take pictures of the sunrise and sunset. And these eclipses of the Martian moons across the face of the sun, we can see them because we're close to the equator. Very, very interesting and somewhat, you know, breathtaking view to look at an eclipse from the surface of another planet.
Chris, if you want to see it, you can go to the website, marsrover.jpl.nasa.gov.
That's right.
See those sites there. Thank you very much, and good luck to you, Jim.
Thank you, Eric. Great talking with you.
Take care. Jim Bell is leading scientist for the PanCam of NASA's Mars Exploration Rover mission. And he's also at Cornell University in Ithaca, associate professor of astronomy. We're going to take a short break, change gears, and we're going to come back and talk about the presidential election coming up and electronic voting. Get your thoughts on, is it ready for prime time this November? Stay with us. We'll be right back.